Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Republican tonight. We have covered similar topics about the presidential race. We have in our archives the topic, the 2012 GOP candidates. And we also covered the topic, Barack Obama for president in 2012. But tonight, we want to discuss I'm Black and Republican. Let me give you a list of who's down with the GOP. Per an article in Essence magazine, former Maryland Governor Michael Steele, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, former U.S. Foreign Service staffer Alan Keyes. He also ran for president in 1996 and 2000, if you remember. One that shocked me was actor Joseph C. Phillips. If you don't remember who he was, he's the one who played Denise's husband on The Cosby Show. Also, we have she was Miss District of Columbia, USA, in 1994, Angela McLaughlin. Also, actor Jimmy J.J. Walker. That one surprised me. He played J.J. on the TV series Good Times. He said he voted for George W. Bush. That one really surprised me. Also, we found former Pittsburgh Steeler, wide receiver, and first-round draft pick Lynn Swann, former Oklahoma Congressman J.C. Watts, boxing promoter Don King. That one surprised me. And also, this one was really a surprise to me. Former NBA basketball player Carl the Mailman Malone. And last but not least, political commentator Armstrong Williams. Those are just some of the people that we know that are black and Republican. So it may not be as rare as you might think. But tonight we want to introduce to you two people that are very smart that are going to help me tackle this subject. But a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. And also, tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at AfricanAmericanNewsAndCommentary.com. Well, let me introduce my guest tonight. Like I said, two very smart people. First, we have Dr. Mary C. Taylor. She's a retired General Motors worker. She worked in their international personnel department and also in finance. She retired from the Learning Institute of Family Education, which she founded, and she's a current member of the Martin Luther King Jr. Advisory Board here in Denton, Texas, and she's a Democrat. Also, we have with us Robert L. Woodson, Sr. He's founder and president of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, which he founded in 1981. He's known as the godfather of the movement to empower neighborhood-based organizations. His social activism dates back to the 1960s. He also directed the Urban League's Administrative and Justice Division in the 1970s. And he's a black Republican. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let me open up their lines and say good evening to Mr. Woodson and to Ms. Taylor.
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Woodson and Ms. Taylor.
Good evening.
I'm glad to
be with you this
just
evening.
Fine.
I'm so glad to have y'all with me, too. Listen, y'all heard my list of who I said was black and Republican. Why do you think it is that successful black people tend to be Republican in a lot of cases? Why do you think that is? We'll start with you, Mr. Woodson. Why do you think
Of all, you left out Martin Luther King Sr.
You know what? I heard Martin Luther King and Martin. I was going to say that later in the show. Martin Luther King Jr. and Sr., I understand, per Martin Luther King's niece, said that they both were Republican.
And also that Richard Nixon, when he ran for president, he carried 40% of DeKalb County, Georgia.
Really?
Yes. Prior to, because he was Eisenhower's point man on civil rights.
Really?
And so this is a part of the history. Also, in Durham, North Carolina, you had the chain, almost a black chamber of commerce. And they made certain that they had people represented in both the Democratic and the Republican Party. In fact, the chain made certain that they were politically diverse and supported both candidates, both people from both political parties, because they understood that as 100 business leaders in Durham, North Carolina, that was called the Black Wall Street, that is economically important as a business person to be diverse in your political views, so that no matter which party wins, that you will win. But ever since the 60s, Black America has abandoned that position and instead have, and for good reasons, in terms of the civil rights movement that was backed. And so that's a recent change. And so that, I think that's important for your listeners to understand, to get some little historical perspective on this.
Ms. Taylor, why do you think successful Black people are becoming Republicans? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's diversity, and I think the wealthier you are, you tend to socialize with people that are wealthy, and you take on their philosophy of thinking politically as well as socially. So I don't think there's any I don't think that's alarming, the fact that African Americans are Republicans or independent or libertarians. I think we have a very diverse culture, and the culture influences that we don't have a homogeneous culture. So there's a lot of diversity, and we certainly have an opportunity to explore those other values or beliefs in these other parties. So I think it has to do with a socialization process. If you socialize with certain types of people, if you've reached a certain economic status, then you may feel differently than if you were at a lower income level. I just want to ask Mr. Woodson this question, though. I mean, because he was talking about some of the earlier folks that were part of the Republican Party, like Martin Luther King. And I think even before the 60s, I believe that the parties flipped from the standpoint that the Republican Party was a party that pretty much valued some of the things that Democrats now value, and that the whole philosophy slipped and then folks started becoming more Democratic as opposed to Republican. Wasn't that before the 60s?
Well, first of all, the Democrat, all of those racists in the South, Bilbo, Bull Connors, they were all Democrats. They were all Democrats. The Democratic Party almost created racism in the South. Bobby Kennedy, when he became president, tipped his hat to those racists and appointed a lot of racist judges. So the reality is all of those Blacks during Reconstruction that were appointed to political office were appointed as Republicans. The Democrats were the ones who were fighting against it. But let me just say, and so that is just part of the history. This isn't my opinion. This is a history. But what happened, of course, is there was a switch. What happened was when Democrats under Lyndon Baines Johnson and others began to on the issue of civil rights, there was a big break when Lyndon Johnson supported the Voting Rights Act. King had a difficult time persuading the Kennedys to do so, and they always gave Luke. So there was a big shift, and then Republicans became defenders of states' rights, and Democrats were advocating for voting rights. And so you had a very understandable change, political change, when Black America that was seeking civil rights found that the Democrats, the new Democrats, were the ones who are fighting for this change. But remember, with Fannie Lou Hamer, the Democratic Party, they refused to seat Blacks, and Blacks had to force their way into the party. So it was, and then they only admitted a very few token blacks at first. So when blacks had to fight their way into the Democratic Party to overcome racism, so that's just, again, a part of the history.
I found something online that I found very fascinating. There's a book out. It deals with the ugly racism history of the Democratic Party. And it prompted Wayne Perryman, they say, to write a book titled The Unfounded Loyalty. And it's an in-depth look into the love affair between blacks and Democrats. Perryman then went on to file a lawsuit against the Democratic Party in December of 2004, it says, and that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, demanding an apology on behalf of black Americans. However, after admitting their history of racism under oath in court, the Democrats refused to apologize, and with an army of lawyers, they say they used a legal technicality called standing to avoid a court order against them, knowing that blacks would automatically still vote Democrat. Does the history of racism within the Democratic Party run that deep?
Yes, of course. I think it runs in every party on both sides.
It does. It does run on both sides. And what I find is most disappointing today is that we are the only people who embrace political ideology as if it's a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the only people, regardless of what the Democrats have demonstrated, that they can't win with the black vote, and Republicans have now concluded that they can win without the black vote. And that's an unfortunate situation today for our people to be in.
But neither
party
is courting the black vote anymore.
No, I know. That's my point. But they are courting the independents.
Okay.
They are courting the Hispanics. They're courting Jews because Jews are competitive. Hispanics are competitive.
Wow.
Independents they are competitive. Sometimes they'll swing to Republicans. Sometimes they'll swing to Democrats. And that's the point that I'm trying to make, that we as black people need to be more politically competitive, and instead of being stuck ideologically and emotional on the Democratic side. 90% we vote Democratic, regardless of what the issues are.
Yeah,
but I don't think that's true. I think you
What's not true? We don't vote 90% Democratic?
Yes, we do, but we're voting for different things than what Republicans are looking for. Republicans are looking to support big business, corporations, the wealthy, and Democrats, yes, they're voting emotionally because most of their issues are centered emotionally. And when I say centered, we're talking about poor people, disabled. We're talking about young students, young people, low-income people, minorities, including Hispanics and African-Americans and other minorities. And Republicans are not inclusive, and they've made that quite clear. They've made it quite clear that they don't want to include other populations. And you have cited that by simply saying that the Republicans don't even court African-Americans. They don't try to go after them. And that's because of their policies.
Let me just say to you, this is the word inclusion. What does that mean? When you look over the past 40 years, in 1963, 82% of all black families had a man and a woman raising children.
Mm-hmm.
Our grandparents were not afraid of our children the way we are today.
Right.
Now, we spent about $15 trillion of poverty money. We have blacks running institutions of government in all of those cities where all of those horrific statistics exist are being run by black Democrats. Now ask yourself, let's look at the facts. Have our conditions improved over the past 40 years with Democrats running, when Bill Clinton, when Democrats controlled both houses of Congress and the White House? How did conditions measurably improve on all those other indicators? They didn't. It's because
under what administration are you speaking of? Which
I'm saying when Democrats are in office, can you point to that when Democrats are running governments, either locally or nationally, suddenly there's an improvement in the conditions of poor blacks? Can you make that argument?
Oh, you really can. Well, let me ask something. Speaking of poor blacks, the Bible says that the poor will be with you always. That said, the Republican Party does not seem to look after the poor. That we know. So why would a poor black person vote Republican?
Because let me just say to you that what has been the benefit of poor people supporting Democrats, what has been the objective consequence? Tell me what policies have been in place in the city of Detroit, Washington, D.C., in all those other cities where the crime rates are soaring, AIDS is proliferating. What has been the concept, the consequence of their policies?
I'm not
saying that Republicans do any better. I'm not trying to make a case that poor people would be better off under Republicans. I'm saying neither party cares about poor people, but Democrats have this illusion that somehow they care more about poor people and therefore they should receive our support and our loyalty. And that's just not true.
Hmm. But what do Republicans offer?
Well, let me tell you what Republicans offer. First of all, they don't profit from the existence of poor people.
They what?
Republicans are the party of business. Any minority, any group in America, their participation in our economy is not dependent upon what government does for them.
Mm-hmm.
It is a result of their small business formation rate.
Mm-hmm.
A healthy community generates about 3 businesses per 1,000 people per year. The black community, our business formation rate is more like 3 businesses per 100,000 per year. So I support people who support small business development to promote greater self-sufficiency. So that's where I'm coming at this, and that's what I do in my professional life. I promote.
You're ignoring 200 years of slavery, racial discrimination, and a whole lot of other things that impact African Americans.
But let me ask you this then. Tell me how slavery, if slavery were the cause of our despair today, why do we have black families during the 10 years of the Depression between 1930 and 1940 when we had virulent racial discrimination, our marriage rate was higher than the white community? We were not afraid of our own grandchildren up until 1962. So you can't make if racial discrimination alone were the cause of black America's condition, then why weren't we worse before the Civil Rights Act?
Because, first of all, we had a lot of cultural conditions that were in place.
Exactly.
It was not until... let me just say this. It was not until... Okay, so what is your justification for it? Because I have an explanation as to what has transformed, because really the rates for marriage among African Americans dropped in the 60s.
Yeah, well, tell me then, if racial discrimination, slavery, and all the things were the culprits, then why did marriage formation rates and family stability remain so high up until 1962? Wouldn't it be worse?
Nationally, right now, more than 50% of marriages end in divorce. So it's much more – the reason being is because of poverty, number one. Men tend to not – African-American men tend not to marry when they have no income. And so if they don't have jobs or they have marginal-type jobs, they are less likely to be employed – less likely to marry anybody.
May I ask you a question, Dan? If that is the case, during the depression in America between 1930 and 1940, there was a 25% unemployment rate nationally. Blacks were 40% unemployed. That did not destroy our marriages. We still married at a higher rate than whites. So explain that one to me.
Let's take a call.
But that's prior. I'm going to say before the 60s, and before the 60s, this really changed in the 60s.
Saying that you relate poverty to low marriage, and I'm saying that we were much poorer in the 30s, and yet our marriage rate was higher.
Not only poverty, a high incarceration rate, high drug use. These are the reasons why. And then men are not available.
Let me say to you, in 1954, our incarceration rate was 90,000 blacks were in prison. That's commensurate with our percentage in the population. Since 1954 till today, our incarceration rate has gone from 90,000 to 900,000. And you're going to tell me that that's because of slavery and discrimination?
We're going to take a phone call or two.
It's gotten worse in 1954 than it was prior in 1934?
Well, like I said, there was a cultural shift in the 60s.
Thank you.
If you understand what happened in the 60s, you would understand why there was this problem with...
You said it was discrimination and racism and slavery. And I'm saying that legacy...
But you're saying that the Republican Party is a party of businesses. And then you made a comparison of the ratio of development of businesses among African Americans as compared to white.
Right. We used to have a really high business formation rate, and that's what helped preserve us.
Okay, y'all, we're going to take a call or two. If you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight. We're talking about the topic on Black and Republican. We're talking with Mr. Robert L. Woodson with the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise and also Dr. Mary Taylor with the Martin Luther King Center in Denton, Texas. Okay, we're going to go and pick up area code 206-708. Good evening. Thank you for holding.
Hi, I'm Reverend Wayne Perryman, and I heard my name mentioned. And listening to the conversation.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, and the conversation is very, very intriguing.
Mr. Perryman, tell them about the book you wrote. I mentioned it earlier. Tell them about the book you wrote.
Unfounded Loyalty talks about the political relationship of African Americans and the Democratic Party, and it looks at the changes in the African American community when we used to trust God more than government. Our communities were much different during that time. We never trusted the government to do anything for us. And so we started our own Negro Baseball League. We started our own insurance companies. There were more black millionaires who were millionaires based upon economic starting business than there were entertainers and athletes. And there was a high regard for blacks to not only trust in God, but we opened up our own schools and colleges. And the main theme in the black community during those days was not Democrat or Republican. Is boy, did you get your education? Get your schooling? And there was a whole emphasis in the entire black community that even when a kid brought home a report card, and if it's a good report card, everybody in the neighborhood knew that it was a good report card. But further down the line, we started trusting government more than God and our God-given ability to do for ourselves. And when that happened, entitlement programs came, Johnson's War on Poverty, and all of these things, and we stopped looking to God and our God-given abilities and started looking to the government to do everything, then our banks closed. Our insurance companies closed, savings and loans companies failed, and they went under, and everything changed in the black community when we started looking to the politicians rather than to our own God-given ability to do the things for our community. And so Unfounded Loyalty talks about that transition and how we move from the Republicans to the Democrats, which affected our value systems in terms of family and everything else. And the government actually became the surrogate father of the black families and the black children in America. And then people like myself, we hit the streets. We became gang members, and the gang members became our surrogate fathers. And the institutions, business institutions that we engaged in there was drugs that produced the money for us to live and survive on, many of the younger generations. So the book talks about the loyalty to the Democratic Party, the party that Woodson talked about and your doctor talked about. It was the party of lynchings. It was the party of segregation, Jim Crow, black codes. That's why I filed the lawsuit. I filed the lawsuit to demand that the Democrats apologize for all of the things that they did to blacks, burning down our communities, bombing our churches, starting terrorist organizations, keeping us from voting, trying with the general theme that keeping blacks in their place. I think President Johnson said it best when he told Richard Russell, these Negroes are getting pretty uppity these days, and we got to do something about that. We got to give them a little something to keep them quiet, but not enough to make a difference. That's what President Johnson said. And since that time, the Democrats have always thrown out just enough to keep us addicted to them, but not enough to make a difference. That's why you'll never see the Democrats push for money for small businesses in the black community, for economic enterprise and those kinds of things. I talk about in my book one of the cases that I had as a defending longshoreman here on the Pacific West Coast. It was the fact that Clinton was supporting these shipping companies, giving them billions of dollars in contracts, federal contracts, and they had job titles in there called nigger jobs. They had Ku Klux Klan. This is in Seattle. Show up on the docks, and they were trying to kill black folks. And when we brought that to the attention to the Clinton administration, when we talked to the Democrat senators about it, they did absolutely nothing. We went to court, and we won a multi-million-dollar settlement. The Democrats really haven't changed their philosophy. They're just addressing the issue of racism in a different format, but it's still all designed to keep blacks in their place.
Wow. Wow. Now, that's a mouthful. Thank you so much, Mr. Perryman. I'm going to leave your line open if you will stay with us. I invited
sure.
Mr. Perryman. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get him. And thank you so much. We're going to try to pick up another call. Area code 314-381. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yeah, how are you this evening? This is Peon.
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing very good. You know, I like what I'm hearing. And, the last caller mentioned about what Johnson said, but let's also don't forget what came out in the Nixon letters also, which was supposed to have been off record when he said it, the things
right.
he said to Haldeman. And, you know, the thing is that we have made wrong turns in many directions. We vote blindly for Democrats without any demands. There was hardly any black first before 1964. That came from Democrats. And both of you are right. Both parties want to keep blacks in their place. Blacks are used as, our children are used as commodities in the school, commodities in the prison system, like rice, wheat, and sugar.
Mm.
We have done things that have hampered us, also like the abortions that we've had since 1973 to 2005, which goes over 18 million, which is more than half your population. So we just have totally messed up. And blacks get the best politics that their money pays for, and that's hardly nothing at all. We don't pay our politicians. We do not fund our politicians. We don't choose them. All we do is vote. And one thing that we lack, which is necessary to have any strong base, is businesses. Without businesses, whereas the business can contribute and fund these politicians. See, we're supposed to choose politicians and give them an agenda to go abroad and work that agenda in our best interest. And if they don't do it, then you fire them. But we don't do that. It's asinine to be voting for the same Democratic people for over 40 years as we have done in some of these major population areas. So
I would, I certainly agree with you were saying here, but because you're right, we used to own in 1863 when 1,000 blacks were fired off the docks of Baltimore, Maryland for striking. We didn't march on Washington demanding jobs, peace, and freedom. We went into our churches and got the money, the capital from the Burial Society, and established the Chesapeake, Maine Dry Dock and Railroad Company, and successfully ran a railroad company for 18 years carrying freight from Baltimore to Maine. And this was the response. We responded with business. We had in the 1920s, a real estate company in Harlem that had over 200 employees. And when whites were discriminating against blacks to drive them out of this one building, apartment complex, our real estate company purchased the complex. This is how we used to respond before we began to sell our souls to politics.
That's right.
We understood.
Right. That's why we had our own Negro Baseball League. They wouldn't
Negro
they wouldn't
Baseball
allow.
League.
We started
had
our own
black
insurance companies because they wouldn't allow us to they wouldn't insure us. We started our own black banks because they wouldn't give us loans. That has always been our response, is not to look to the white man to give us anything. We've always came together as a community, and we formed these institutions like the National Bar Association, which is the largest black legal organization in America with thousands of attorneys and judges. They started because of the kinds of things that the Democrats were doing to blacks down south, and they had no representation, so they started the National Bar Association. You're absolutely right, Dr. Wilson. Every time there was an issue, we didn't go march on Washington. We marched to our churches, and we held meetings, and we came together, and they took money from their mattresses and out of the coffee cans in their backyards, and they came together and put this money together to rebuild our communities and to take care of our needs. Now, with over $500 billion now, is that the right figure, Woodson, now?
Yes, it
is. Our consumers?
So with $700
you mean
billion
we
now.
Can't rebuild all the inner cities in America ourselves?
Well, we really can.
Let me add something else to that,
75
too,
Tuskegee Airmen knew how to fly before Tuskegee Institute opened, and they were trained by a black woman in Chicago.
And
we had our own flight school.
How about
yep.
the? How about and we had also when you was marching in Montgomery, boycotting white buses in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, blacks had a bus company called the Safe Bus Company. It had existed since the 1920s and finally went out of business in 1970s. That had over 500 buses. That was black control from the bottom to the top.
Mm-hmm.
We also
Philadelphia,
had,
in my hometown, we had the Jackson and Gray Bus Company.
Yeah,
when blacks went on picnics, we hired on. So this
you
is
never
the whole
get this
point.
In black history, they don't teach this to our black kids in black history. The black kids today think that black folks back then were ignorant. They don't have a clue of the economic viability under Jim Crow and discrimination throughout the nation, how we still thrived, survived, and succeeded.
I spoke to 150 young black MBAs graduating from the finest business schools in America, and not one of them knew that we had our own railroad, that we had our own insurance companies, that we had a black Wall Street in Oklahoma and a black Wall Street in Durham, North Carolina. They knew nothing of our economic past.
Mr. Perry, we also had a black man coming out of slavery, that was C.R. Patterson, that was building automobiles before Ford was.
Our young people today, because we're hung up on race. We are a slave, and white folks are enjoying us. We're hung up on politics and race. I'm in Washington, D.C., where I live. Every law firm, every lobbying firm has a Republican desk, and they have a Democratic desk.
That's
so
right.
No matter which party wins or
right.
loses, they have power.
That's right.
But we are the only people that we will Clarence Thomas was portrayed as a lawn jockey on a cover of a black magazine. But yet, Mel Reynolds, who was a pedophile, in Congressman Reynolds, he went to jail for having sex with a teenage girl. Gus Savage, congressman from Illinois, tried to rape a 21-year-old black woman, young Peace Corps worker, while on official duty in Africa, and was censured. But nobody ran to her defense. You see, because these people can hide behind a racial. We give them a racial exemption, and that's
right.
What's killing us right now today.
It is.
Article that you wrote, Mr. Woodson. You said that the rich legacy of the civil rights movement has been trampled upon and degraded by many past and current black political and activist leaders. So you feel like our leaders are not standing up like they should anymore?
Not only not standing up, but they're hustling it. Listen, we have in my city of Washington, D.C., in Prince George's County, Jack Johnson and his wife, county exec, one of the wealthiest black communities in the country. Both of them are going to jail, one of them for 7 years. Every day that they were in office in Prince George's County, every day that they were in office, they were taking bribe money and giving special contracts to white developers. And now both of them are going to prison. And they were on. He was on tape, ironically, counting bribe money, saying that you know white folks are trying to put minorities like me in prison. He's sitting there saying that while he's counting out bribe money. Harry Thomas.
You heard about
members of the Black Caucus who took a money that was supposed to go to scholarships and gave it to their grandchildren and friends. I mean, why are we outraged when people who are supposed to be in office to serve us commit these kind of crimes against our own people, but there's no censor, there's no price to pay for it?
The only two leaders, in my opinion, who over the years have really come out and talked about economic development I'm not a follower of his, Louis Farrakhan, and talk about blacks coming together. And then Tavis Smiley has his efforts, but there's never really been a black leader. And I know Dr. Woodson has been speaking for a number of years, him excluded. But there's never really been the so-called black leaders that really emphasize economic development for our community.
Let me say to you, remember when S.B. Fuller? Fuller has newspapers. S.B. Fuller in 1963, speaking before the National Chamber of Commerce, said that blacks should really take over grocery stores and small businesses in these urban centers,
right,
and they could generate 3 million jobs and business. Well, Jesse Jackson tore him apart and organized a national boycott of Fuller products because this man dared to say we need
That's
to
right.
get in small business.
That's
S.B.
Right.
Fuller almost went bankrupt, and as a result, he set up a franchise, and that's the only thing to save him. He was castigated as an Uncle Tom for doing what the Koreans are doing in our communities throughout the country.
And that's another thing. Blacks don't even know who Uncle Tom was. He's a black man that sacrificed his life because he wouldn't tell where the two slave women were that was hiding out and running for their freedom. He got beat to death. The whole thing about our history is all twisted up. As they say on the street, it's all jacked up, man.
It really
Can
is.
Can I say something else?
Yeah,
sure.
314, go ahead.
Yeah, and what you all are saying is actually right. But going back to the airlines, you know, you had a black man who was, Hubert Julian, was scheduled to fly across, make a transatlantic flight back in 1924, 3 years before Lindbergh. And here's another thing that's a slap in our face. The NAACP would come out and sue any organization that tries to have school choice. Now, just think about this. They even go to the fact that if you have any here in the St. Louis area where they had some white out-state legislators who was going to support an amendment that would provide voucher money for that would give tax breaks to businesses that would fund any student that wanted to go to a school other than a public school. And this is what they said. They told the white outstate legislator, this is what the NAA said, that if you do that, we would accuse you of racism.
And you're absolutely right about that. And I'll tell you something that's even more egregious. 70% of people in prisons have spent some time in the foster care system.
Wow.
And the very fact that that is a $55 billion industry where social service agencies get paid to keep kids in limbo. And yet the Catholic Charities is one organization that have over the years, decades, placed a lot of black children in adoptive homes. But in Massachusetts and Illinois, they had to close down their foster adoption agencies because over the gay issue. And the
right.
NAACP and the Urban League sided with the gay community.
Yes, they did.
Against the interests of black children, and, and you don't hear any outrage about
Nothing.
And it's because the Catholic Charities steadfastly refused to place children in the homes of gay couples. NAACP thinks more about gay community than they do about the plight of black children who are now in Massachusetts and Illinois are going to be denied an opportunity to go into a stable home. The NAACP and the Urban League are not setting up adoption agencies.
No.
Dr. Taylor, you're a member of the NAACP. Would you like to respond to that?
I'm a member of the Denton chapter. I don't know what they do, and I've only been a member for a while here because I've only been here for a year. But I don't see them taking on any active causes at all. Zero.
Mm. Yeah, they've lost their relevancy in the black community, and because many blacks are disillusioned and disenchanted with them, they're now getting white people to run their chapters, and they're even getting white people to run their chapters. They're so desperate, and they're desperate because black people lost faith in them. I take on lawsuits all the time because people go to the NAACP to ask them for representation, and they turn them down. Then they come to me, and I take up their case. That's how we won that multi-million-dollar case against the Longshoremen Union here up on the West Coast, because the NAACP would not represent these blacks who are being discriminated on the waterfronts.
Wow.
Kevin, Obama's Safe Schools is named Kevin Jennings, and he's one of the people that belongs to that organization that's called the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, who was having seminars in schools in Massachusetts with grade schoolers, and the subject was, should I swallow and fisting? So that's the kind of sickness that's going on. Black people put up with this stuff, and it's just totally ridiculous.
Exactly. And can I just say something here? Because I've listened to a lot of history and some of the things that are going on in the communities. And one of the things that Mr. Woodson was talking about earlier about what happened prior to the 60s, and Dr. Perriman has talked about what has happened. It's the disintegration of the family, because there are some apolitical things that are occurring in our environment that are designed to break up the family, and two, to support all of these other institutions like prisons, and you talked about adoption agencies, and somebody mentioned schools of choice. All of those things. Somebody has to go to some of these things, and some of this infiltration, which even in slavery we had the issue about trust. We no longer trust each other, and we had a strong culture, but now we no longer trust anybody. And so when you say go to the churches and do things in the churches, churches are like businesses now. And so they don't have that kind of sense of community. Some churches do, but some of them do not have that sense of community where you can go and create businesses and talk about plans and projects. So we've lost a lot.
Let me, as a black minister from the inner city, jump in on this here. You're absolutely right about the black church. It's lost its relevancy in terms of building righteous communities with strong families and strong values. Many of our preachers, and I come from the largest black Pentecostal denomination in the world, many of our preachers are living so good now that they forget that there are so many people who are not living so good. And where many of our businesses years ago came out of the institution of the churches, our colleges, our historically black colleges, and many of the other businesses, the grassroots started in a black church, we're not the incubator of businesses anymore. We're not the standards of values anymore. When the gay community tell us that they're just like the black folks and just struggling just like the blacks did, we don't have a black preacher saying, wait a minute, baby. No, y'all are nothing like us. There's no comparison whatsoever. They grin and they try to be politically correct, and our people are dying before our eyes. Our tithes are down, our offerings are down, our churches are closing, and the black preachers, and I write about this in my book, I said, we need to return back when the church was relevant, when the church was important, when the church looked out for all of our needs, economically, spiritually, and even from the education standpoint. Right now, we're just going to church, and I'm Pentecostal. We're hooping, hollering, and shouting, and while our communities are dying.
Well, there are a cadre of people like Eddie Long and all these and these prosperity preachers who say, make me rich and you'll go to heaven.
Right.
But there are people like you, Dr. Perriman, and Buster Sorey is my close friend in Somerset, New Jersey. And there are a lot of young preachers today who understand that the role of the church has to return to what it used to represent, a source of renewal of our community, instead of hustling the parishioners, you know. I think this conversation for me is a breath of fresh air, because there are too many of us who get hung up on Democrats and Republicans. I don't care. I'm a radical pragmatist. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of my time reducing gang violence. We're in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with our initiatives where we are able to go into the worst, most violent public school and reduce violence by 25% in 3 months. And now we're in 11 schools there. Same thing. So we have models on the ground that go into the most drug-infested, crime-ridden neighborhoods and apply those traditional values that explained our success in the 30s and 40s. We are applying these old values to a new vision. And so at the center, through Neighborhood Enterprise, we have models, active models of restoration of values of people, with the consequence that violence is dramatically down and families are being restored.
And the only reason, Dr. Woodson, you're successful because you're a strong black man. We did the same thing here in Seattle. I brought together, because I work with professional athletes, all the black players from the NFL, our Seahawks team, all the black players from our Seattle Supersonic team, and then all the black players from our Seattle Mariner baseball team. And it hit national news when we had a banquet that's called the Back Home Banquet for Brothers. And all of these black athletes, all the black millionaires, all the black college professors, teachers, janitors, we put on tux. We packed out the largest hotel ballroom here, and I was the keynote speaker. I helped put it on to appeal that we must have more role models for our young men. Then we started a program where all of these men, there were so many men there, we had to turn them away. We had over 2,000 that packed out that auditorium. We had Grammy Award winner singers to come in. And before that before that banquet was over, Becky, every black man in that whole entire banquet hall had tears in their eyes, rolling down in their cheek.
That's
what
we've got
to do. To the schools, which, and it made Sports Illustrated, we start going to the schools, these professional athletes, hanging out with the kids, inviting them out for lunch, and it's going to take that kind of hands-on kind of thing. Now, some of the gang members that I brought out have their master's degrees. And so we sent them to college.
I have the same experience. We've gone into an area that had 55 gang murders in a 5-square-block area in 2 years, and over the last 12 years, we haven't had a single gang murder in that area.
But we got to do better than that with these gangs. You know, one of the reasons why I come out children in the condition they is because previous black generations did not leave them with anything to build off of. We talk about the Koreans in out there in Flushing, New York, just that small 300,000 earn more, have bigger business money than blacks in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. We talk about these churches. You know, it's sinful for somebody out there on Crenshaw Boulevard by the name of Blake to build that multi-million dollar church of his, which don't belong to them. It belongs to the IRS. They should have built a school or a training center
right.
and have church in the damn
basement. That's my bishop. Watch out. That's my bishop.
Let me ask a question.
I'm
joking with you now.
Ask where are you all from, Dr. Perriman, and what states are you all in?
Well,
Seattle, Washington, but I'm a licensed minister with the Churches of God in Christ.
We have grassroots leaders in 39 states. We've trained over 2,500 grassroots leaders in 39 states. So we've got a big footprint.
Well, let me ask a question. Let me switch gears just a little bit. We know that the black community is in trouble. Question is, can Barack Obama get us out of it in the next 4 years?
No,
he's part of the problem.
Yeah. Part
That's
of
right.
The problem.
Now, why do you say he's part of the problem? Who
okay,
said
but listen, he pimped the black folks. In his book, Dreams of My Father, he said he will become black when it's convenient for him to become black, and he'll be white when it's convenient for him to be white. When he came here to Seattle to campaign, it was our church choir in the heart of the inner city, the strongest black high school in Seattle that turned out all of our athletes. He came there to have his rally in the inner city, and my church choir sung. But when he came back here 4 weeks ago, he bypassed the inner city, didn't stop to say anything to the black folks, went across the bridge to Medina, where Paul Allen lives, and that's where he had his $35,000 a plate dinner. And you have to go through the hood to get to that community. And he went through the hood, never stopped for even 10 minutes to talk to the black leaders. He uses us when it's convenient. And when it's not convenient, he don't have anything to say. When the black folks, black preachers went to him and saying, why are you pushing gay rights? Why are you pushing same-sex marriage and abortion? You know, as black ministers, we don't stand for that. He told them, basically, he didn't care what they stood for. That was what he promised he was going to do, and he was going to do it. When the Black Broadcasters Association asked him for stimulus money, when he's giving out stimulus money to everybody else, he told them no. And then when it came to historically black colleges, he cut them by $85 million. And when all the black leaders started complaining, he slipped in more money for them under the health care bill. So no, he's not the solution. He don't look to the blacks. The blacks are not sponsoring the $35,000 plate dinners like the brother said. We're not giving one dime to his campaign. He's going with Axelrod. He's going with Rahm Emanuel. He's going with the white boys that gets him money to get him elected. He ain't going to the black folks.
And then his agenda is for the same old oligarchy. Anytime that you give bailout money to American banks and then the same people that's behind and in the and that's in the hierarchy structure in those American banks, ownership, are the same ones that got money in the European banks when they bailed that out too. So that's
right.
A bunch of crap. Black folks need to wake up, if in fact
they
now, that's the whole
have
point.
When have you ever heard Obama say anything that he has an agenda for blacks?
Well, he has not. In fact, he said, I think when they said, what was he going to do about high unemployment in the black community, he said, if you could get America working again, black folks would be working again.
And when he did his bus tour, he didn't go into the inner city of Detroit. Well, he went to the small suburban towns. And then when the blacks in Chicago, black parents asked him to come there because gang violence had increased, and they wanted him to come back to Chicago to have a meeting with the black parents and the black kids, he refused. He sent Eric Holder, and he sent his Secretary of Education there, and they didn't even hold the community in the black. They didn't hold the meeting in the black community. The blacks had to go outside their community to try to attend that meeting.
But let me just, can I just ask this question? There was this, Dr. Perriman and Mr. Woodson, you all talked for a long period of time about leadership. And then now you're back, now it seems like if nothing is working, you talked about the NAACP, which at some point in our history was a leader that we looked, was an organization, a leadership organization that we looked up to. But I don't think you can blame everything that's occurring in our community on the President of the United States.
We're just saying he is not the solution. The problems existed before he got in office,
exactly.
And they still exist now, and he don't have an agenda or a solution for these problems.
He's not the blame.
He's not the sole blame. These problems existed before he came in the office.
Right, but here's the caller came in, and the earlier caller said, we vote, we lack involvement, and then there's no accountability. We do not hold our leaders accountable. And we do the same in the churches. We don't hold the churches accountable. We support the building fund when they're building these huge cathedrals.
Right.
Yes.
Support the building fund. So we do not hold our leaders or anybody accountable in our community. We can go to our ministers and we can say, well, let's do something around economic development. Let's do something around jobs. I mean, the issues that exist in our community are local. They're based upon things that you talked about historically, where black folks were self-empowered. They did their own. They created their own. They didn't rely on anybody. But the way we are structured now, we're less self-reliant and more dependent on others to make decisions for us. And I don't know how we get out of that cycle, but it's a terrible cycle now because we're back to where we started. Because I think, Dr. Perriman, you're saying in the business that you're operating, you're taking people back to traditional values. And I think traditional values is something that we've lost because we've got so many changes, so many things that are interfering with our culture. I mean, we used to have a strong culture. We don't have that anymore.
We got to do better than to just have values and culture. We have to learn. We have to teach our people how to master this economic system of the United States.
You have to value it before you get people to accept the lessons. But let me just say, Carrie,
that comes out of your school.
A good start is a show like this, because I must say my expectations were not very high when you called me. I am blessed to have been a part of this. And more people that have a microphone like yours need to open it up, because one of the things that advanced the black cause back in the day was the quality of the debate that took place.
Mm-hmm.
There has been no debate in the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You get cussed out if you stand up and say we ought to be independent and self-sufficient. Even though that's what Farrakhan preached, that's what Malcolm X preached. To me, that's what we're talking about, Brother Perriman, and is old black nationalism.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and
called conservative is fascinating to me, that what was black nationalism in the 60s is now called black conservatism.
And you know, the other thing, what we had in the early
22 with Marcus Garvey.
We got to take another caller.
I don't think it's black conservatism. I really think it's, I mean, we just have lost our way.
And we have. We all agree on that.
And I'm saying that because people don't have a sense of direction on which way they should be going. Like you talk about
you don't know where to go if you don't know where you come from. And I think one of the things that Dr. Woodson's doing, I'm sure Dr. Mary's done the same thing, is to educate our kids about our history. What made us a great people? What turned us into the kind of people? Our kids don't have a clue about the history that we're talking about here on your program today. 99 9/10 of the African-American kids, whether they have a master's degree or a Ph.D. degree, do not have this information. And we have to educate them before we can move further. They need to know where we come from. So they need. That's the only way that they'll know the direction of where we need to go.
We need to teach them more than the plantation and the ghetto and slavery.
We
and all the history they get. Is,
My sons and I wrote a book, Homestead Porches.
We're going to take another caller. We're going to go to area code 402-972. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Good evening to the family. I wanted to state that as far as, you know, holding a president accountable, well, anytime you hold a president accountable, you get called a hater.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting labeled a hater. You're getting labeled all these god-awful things because you didn't support him because he's black.
Mm-hmm.
I, as a black man in America, understand that the structure of the political system is controlled by one hand, a group of hands.
Hmm.
So it doesn't matter if Democrat or Republican. They're doing their job, which is not helping the poor and those of color. That's what it's set up for. So I don't know why black folks or anybody is so surprised it's not working for them. But you can't. You criticize the president, you get labeled all kinds of god-awful names. You're pretty much called a traitor. Or, excuse me, according to Steve Harvey, you're an Uncle Tom.
You know, you're right. When Travis Smalley and Cornel West did the poverty tour, a lot of people, including Steve Harvey, called them haters and some other unkind things. Was that fair?
No, it wasn't fair, but, you know, Steve Harvey's an opportunist, first and foremost. So I don't take pretty much anything he says out of his damn mouth. And it's serious.
All three of them are opportunists. But
all three of them are opportunists.
But all three of them are opportunists. Can I just say this? Because we have African-American people have a tendency to not stick together.
Mm-hmm.
We really do not. So when you talk about somebody mentioned the Koreans and not only Arabs, I mean, in Detroit there's a huge Arab population that's real successful. Koreans are doing the stuff that selling hair and whatever they're doing. All of those groups, including Chinese, all these other ethnic groups, they all stick together. They all support each other. If somebody builds a business, the Koreans going to come and support their own. The Chinese, the other folks are going. But African Americans do not support their own.
And none of them are in politics. None of those groups care about politics. Smart business people purchase their politicians.
But to the lady's point, is here in America, we're so psychologically damaged anyway. So no wonder we don't support. I mean, it all boils down to we've been pulled left, right, up, down, forwards, and backwards. That's why we don't have this support system with each other. We've been taught so many different ways on how to function because we're following someone else's system.
But you don't think quite as straight as you should.
But we used to stay together. We used to come together.
Let me explain.
Not one of the 100 businesses during the 10 years of Depression in Durham went under.
Booker T. Washington used to have a Negro Business League, and they used to have an annual conference every year where black businesses would come together and discuss ways to improve black businesses. That was called the Negro Business League.
They don't have those kind of things anymore.
Let me explain
this is
what
a funny kind of ironic thing. In Durham, we had the first company, a national company, to produce and distribute nylon stockings. It was in Durham, but they knew if everybody in the country knew they were black, they would not buy their products. So they hired an all-white national sales force.
Mm.
But the key thing you said there is produce. When we talk
they
about
produced.
Support, yeah, when
nylon
we talk about,
stockings, the first manufacturer were blacks, and we distributed by – we played the game. We knew how to play the game.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
When you say
yeah,
when you say support black businesses, supporting black businesses is not going into a retail store buying what that black person is selling on the shelves. If you got a chicken business, then blacks should be raising the chickens. They should be processing the chicken. They should
be
warehousing the chicken. They should
be
transporting the chickens. They should be doing
right.
it all. Then if
we
a competition opens up down the street from you, they still got to buy your chickens. If we are not in manufacturing, that's why come we can't compete in hair. Asians are never going to sell us with family prices. They ain't crazy. They're not going to do that. Until
okay,
we
y'all, let's go back to the
produce.
Phone lines. We're going to pick up area code 214-930. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chris from Texas.
Okay.
And I'm glad to hear the show tonight. I think everybody has some important things to say. I really like the title of the show tonight. I'm a black Republican. Ultimately, my vote is ultimately cast a Republican ballot after it's all said and done. But I really identify with the conservative.
Are you African American?
I'm true black.
Okay.
Yes. But the Republican Party has fallen by the wayside. I have three particular things that have my life has headed towards. The leadership, government, church, local school, the sound moral aspect of leadership is not the way I saw it when I was coming up. You know, I know something in the Bible talks about no matter if there's snakes, if there's poison, depending upon your spiritual condition, it really won't harm you to the point where you can't be effective. One of the things that I see, and I'm not speaking just about the black community, but Americans in general, we're no longer willing to deal with the truth. Earlier you were talking about holding the president accountable, and my comment is not just for the current president. For several presidential administrations, we've allowed them to go about with leadership characteristics that were less than truthful.
Mm-hmm.
Just two other quick comments. The other thing is citizen responsibility. I'm from a family of 13 kids. My father sometimes worked three jobs. One thing he told me and my other brothers, always cover the ground that we stand on.
Wow.
It still comes down to that mother, that father, responsibility to raising those children, not the government, not anyone else. It's ultimately those parents' responsibility or lack of. And the other one, again, I just want to throw out is about the truth. The truth is we need to take care of us. I need to take care of me. You need to take
That's
care
right.
of you. Collectively, of course, it all comes out relatively good in the end. But somewhere along the way, we got away from the truth. I know I can't speak for everyone, but the words of my God says that I need to do what I'm supposed to do. Really appreciate your show tonight.
Thank you.
Here in Texas, where I am, I have been working in a Tea Party group the past year, and I've been absolutely astounded with the relationships that have developed where I see people different from me struggling with these same issues about moral leadership, citizenship responsibility, and living the truth. Thanks for letting me comment.
Thank you
Thank
for
you.
Calling in. I have one question that's been with me ever since I came up with the topic. When we look at the GOP candidates,
the ones that we have just in front of us, the ones that we're watching every other night in these debates. If we look at Perry, we know that that's another vote for the Bush-Cheney ticket. If we look at Romney, we know that he's a flip-flopper. We know that if it's Friday, he'll say it's Wednesday if he thinks it's going to get him a vote. We know that Bachman, realistically, it's not a very good chance that they're going to elect a woman president. So would that just be right, like really giving away a vote? Gingrich is a career politician for the most part. He has no morals, and I think he's totally cutthroat. I would not trust him as a president. So that said, if someone says today, I think I want to be a Republican, looking at what you have in front of you as far as, you know, the GOP candidates right now, why would they vote for the Republican ticket today?
Let me just respond by saying to you, if when those polls were taken, when Obama was, given what you just said, when a generic Republicans were put placed against Obama, Obama lost by 5 points.
Wow.
So what does that tell you about his presidency? If let's assume that everything you said about those people were true, what does that say about the choices we have with Obama? As far as I'm concerned, the man that I would have supported, Mitch Daniels, is not running.
The man that I would support is Ron Paul, if you really want to straighten out some of the stuff that 90%
right.
of Americans don't understand what's going on.
The problem with Ron Paul is Ron Paul does not relate at all to poor people. I mean, and I only pick that up when
none of them do.
I don't know.
You haven't had a president relate to poor people in God knows when.
But Ron Paul, I think someone threw a question at him about insurance for a poor person. And they said this is a person who had insurance and for some reason due to loss of employment or whatever the scenario, this is just the gist of it, I don't remember it verbatimly, but the gist of it was the person no longer had insurance. So how would he feel about a situation like that, and should the government give him insurance or something? But the gist of what he said really bothered me, and he said, I don't care.
There we go.
He said, I don't care because he ought to have insurance.
You've got to stop depending on government.
But the scenario that they gave him set up a situation in which the person who no longer had insurance, it wasn't due to their own fault. I mean, if you have insurance today and lose your job tomorrow, if you need to go to the hospital in 2 weeks, what do you do? So you don't have insurance. You know, and basically he could not relate to a scenario like that. He said it's his fault. He ought to have insurance. Move on.
That
really kind of bothered me.
My son is 33 years old, and he's a college graduate, and he's in business, and he doesn't want insurance.
Okay.
I mean, he's made a choice. He said, look, I'm healthy. I don't expect to be sick, and therefore I don't think that I ought to be made to get insurance.
Okay.
Yeah.
People ride around on motorcycles without helmets, and they don't want to. But if they get, we need to be much more disciplined in our thinking and about this. As far as I'm concerned, man, I think we just, you're not going to get all you're going to get from any one person. You've got to think strategically.
Amen.
and ask yourself, if I can get 30% or 40% of what is important to me. Now, I will say that when you have somebody who is just totally immoral, they cannot be trusted.
Oh, I agree. Well, then let me ask this then. We know that voting is really, you're not going to find one person who believes totally like you do and is really voting for the lesser of two evils, you know, when
That's
you get
right.
to the ballot box for the most part. That said, what should somebody be looking for in the next president of the United States?
Well, let me say this. When John McCain was running for office, he flew to Seattle. He met with myself and 11 other people before he announced his candidacy and let us vet him to some degree.
Hmm.
When last year Mitt Romney came to Seattle and we met with, but I was the only black person there because it's $5,000 a plate. We met at a very private estate, And I had a chance to talk to Mitt Romney, ask him questions in front of everybody there. I'm not impressed with any of these people.
No, I'm not either.
And here's the biggest question, and I think Dr. Woodson brought it up, and also Dr. Marion, one of your callers, is that we have to have our own agenda that we present to the politicians.
Yes.
Because everybody has an agenda, whether it's the women's group, the gay groups, the veterans groups, the labor groups. Everybody have an agenda for the candidate, and they don't care about all the other kinds of things. They care about whether they're going to get their piece of the pie.
What issue should Blacks have on their mind when they're going to the voting booth?
What did you ask them to do for you?
Mm. Let me tell you one issue that we will take to the table, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that is in our work. I started my organization 30 years ago, and we have been working to perfect certain models of social intervention. We can demonstrate that we can come into a community that is high crime, and through our intervention, we can take people who have been in prisons and whose lives have been turned around. We can work with them to start taxi companies, food service delivery businesses in those communities, because once their character changes, their characteristic has an advantage. They're not afraid of the streets, and the streets, and they know they have access to those streets. Just like Brother Perry, you remember the Muslims used to deliver food late at night,
right?
Because they had moral authority,
right?
Our people have moral authority too. All they need. So we come to the table and say, we can show you how to reduce violence, increase economic opportunity in a community at lower public cost, because fewer people are being taken to emergency rooms, violence is down, police response is down. So we're making a social / economic case as to why our initiative, people ought to invest in it, because the mistaken assumption is that more spending on poverty means less poverty, and it's just a lie.
Doctor, you've got to come to the table with something specific. If you're going to eat, bring a knife, a fork, a spoon, a stick, or something, but bring something to the table.
The key element to this.
When you look at the difference between Republicans and the Democrats, is that Republicans will support self-help type programs.
That's right.
Where people are going to do things for themselves rather than to look to the government. I'm not saying that they care anymore for Black folks, because I talked to Sean Spicer down there, the RNC. The RNC people know me very well, and we talk back and forth, and I challenge him on a number of things. But one thing that Republicans will support is self-help programs, and that's why Bush put the Faith-Based Initiative program out there, saying you people in the community know how to do more than we do. But what happened with many of us in the Black church is that it required that they audit our finances and our books, and we didn't want to do that because too much money goes to the Black preacher. So a lot of us didn't qualify for the Faith-Based Initiative program because we certainly didn't want them looking at our books, all the money we give to our preacher for anniversary, for salary, for pastoral this, for birthday this, and this
Love
type of
this.
Thing. And I believe in supporting our pastors. I'm a Black minister. I believe in supporting the pastors. But the reason why the Faith-Based Initiative program didn't work for many other Black churches is because it requires that you open your books and show how you're spending the money, and many of us weren't willing to do that.
I totally agree. Let me ask you a question. You know what? We're down to almost our last 30 minutes of the show. If you just tuned in, you've come center stage for tonight's topic. We're talking about I'm Black and Republican. We're talking with Mr. Robert Woodson with the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. We're also talking to Dr. Mary Taylor with the Martin Luther King Center here in Denton, Texas. And we're also talking to Wayne Perryman. He's the author of Unfounded Loyalty. Listen. I'm calling him McCain. I think I heard that somebody else said that earlier. Should Kane have dropped out of the race, or should he have hung in there?
He should have dropped out. There's no way that he was going to be the candidate for the Republican Party, and it'd just be a waste of money and distraction and put his family through too much hell, because it was just the beginning of the attacks on that man. And I think he did the right thing. If you preserve anything, and preserve your integrity and your family.
But Newt Gingrich is going through the same thing, and he doesn't look like he's about to quit. I mean, they're talking about his three affairs.
But they've known about that for some time. That is not new news, and so it's not something that the media sprung on the public, because everybody knew about Newt's baggage.
And at least Gingrich,
and there's more that's going to come out later on.
But Herman's stuff is a little more contemporary than that.
Yeah, and Newt stuff, there's more stuff that's going to come out on Newt as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I got inside information.
With Herman Cain, if he didn't have the baggage that seems to, you know, be following him, when he first joined the race, a lot of black people began to say, he's just hating on Barack Obama, and you know, this is Barack Obama's time, and he shouldn't
right.
be getting in the race.
Oh,
is that ridiculous
right.
for black people to think that two black men cannot run against each other?
Absolutely, but what Cain's candidacy did do that upset some other folks, and that is he proved that even conservative whites will vote for a black if they agree
yes.
with him on the issues.
That's right.
You cannot no longer say, well, you know, whites are conservatives are racist, and therefore they would never vote. And that's why they're against Obama. No. People forget that a lot of whites in Utah and Iowa voted for Obama, and they're now having buyer's remorse.
Well, like Helen Thomas said, she thought that Obama would do more for blacks, and she was dissatisfied with him. And, you know, I didn't read that part, what you said in his book about he's black when it comes to being convenient.
Yeah,
but
I read both of his books, Audacity of Hope and Dreams for My Father.
Let me tell you what I'm doing. I try to have meetings with black businesses and get them involved with looking at West Africa for manufacturing production. That way they can take advantage of the trade laws like the African Growth and Opportunity Act that permit manufacturing and produce goods to come back into the states, untariff and non-taxed. That way they can use affirmative action in a real meaningful way by going to these major department stores like your Target, your Macy's, and your Walmart and asking for 15% of their shelf store space. That way they can manufacture some of the goods that can show up on the stores that we would own in these mega black metropolitan areas where we have a large population. And that way we can start taking control of the things that we consume and the things that it takes for us to substantiate ourselves.
See, we need to have more conversations like that. You see, I was impressed when this brother on Wall Street got busted for commodities trading. I said, boy, we have overcome.
That was Jet.
I said, when that brother got locked up for stealing millions of dollars on Wall Street, I said, now that's the kind of crime we need to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be doing any crimes. But
no,
some,
I agree. I'm being facetious, but the
well,
point
he was
is,
doing a crime. He was doing
we
it
are
for everybody
in
else.
The game.
Somebody
well,
ought to play the game.
Let me jump in here for a second. Are black politicians targeted more often than white politicians in these events?
No, they're doing more crap than white politicians.
Is that what that is? So when black people get mad when a black politician is investigated, is that ridiculous? Because if he's not doing anything, then the ultimate result is he's not going to be found guilty of anything. So should we be feeling, upset because a politician is investigated just because
we need to find out, first of all, is the brother or sister stealing first? Look at the truth first.
Look at Jefferson in New Orleans. He was stealing. Look how he was doing it.
Listen,
you know,
nine members of William Jefferson's family, sister, brother, daughter, they worked for a Louisiana government. They took a $500,000 grant that was supposed to go to help black teenage mothers They took every dime of that money and spent it on themselves, and they're now facing indictment. But you don't hear Steve Harvey and any of these other people expressing outrage like that. If somebody shoots at you wearing the same uniform, it's called treason.
Mm.
I think some of these black politicians who get elected to office in the name of helping blacks, and then they take the money and steal it, keep it for themselves, they ought to be treated worse than whites who do the same thing.
Wow.
That's right.
Well,
they should be.
They
and the reason why they do that is because they are not afraid of the black community.
No.
They're more afraid of somebody who's out there enticing them to work against the black community than they are afraid of the repercussions that should come from the black community.
They use race as a shield against criticism from whites and a spear against blacks who would accuse them of doing wrong.
I think there was a politician in Memphis, Ricky Pete, I believe was his name, got in trouble for something, went to jail, and they all, I mean, really the community all but gave him a getting-out-of-jail party and then reelected him.
Exactly.
Well, they did the same thing to Gus Savage. When Gus Savage attempted to rape that young 21-year-old girl, a young woman, rather, on the backseat of his limousine, Charlie Rangel and Bill Gray supported him successfully for reelection. Now, where were the feminists? This I talked to the lawyer of this young woman. This young woman was afraid to visit her mother and father in Savage's district for fear of being assaulted by some of his supporters.
Wow. Okay,
but
well,
I bet you all
question.
Haven't heard about that, right?
Nobody's ever heard
no.
of that. Another
I know
question.
Because a lot of the press will suppress that kind of stuff because they don't want to be accused of racism.
Mm, I agree. We're going to get ready to talk about them changing the voter ID bill, and Ms. Taylor's going to explain that to us. But before we do, why have blacks not challenged the voting rights bill? Why have we not? I mean, we are the only race that has to, every couple years,
they have to re-up
the bill again and sign it again and say it's okay for blacks to vote. Why have we never challenged that?
Challenge
that's
what?
Not true. The way
well,
that
first
bill
of all,
written.
The 1965 Voting Rights Act was designed to target major counties in the South. It wasn't a universal kind of law
no.
that applied to everyone in the United States. It was targeting those areas of the South where they had poll taxes and all these other kinds of things. But the Bush administration challenged the Congressional Black Caucus and said, why don't we just eliminate this time frame and just make this a permanent thing that don't have to be renewed every year? And the caucus told them, this is our trump card that we will play when it's convenient for us to get something done. They didn't want a law.
Let me explain to her what that is. Those counties, like the gentleman just said, if those counties would like to do anything that would change voting patterns, especially like in redistricting or anything else, they have to first go through the Justice Department in order to get approval to make sure that they are not violating the rights of blacks. It's not
right.
clean across the country. It's just those counties that has a history of all sorts of things like counting bottles and bubbles in a bottle and all that stuff before you can vote. It's just those particular counties. It's not all blacks in America.
That's right.
Okay. Well, then, Ms. Taylor, explain to us what they're about to do as far as the voter ID requirements. What are they changing?
Okay. Senate Bill 14 was passed here in Texas earlier in the year, and effective January 1, a photo ID is required to verify that the individual asking to vote is the individual who is registered. And in other
words, what's the problem with that?
Nothing.
The problem with that is that there are over 605,000 registered voters in Texas who do not have a voter ID, a photo.
So they can get do you know any? Let me ask everybody on this call. Do you know anybody without an ID?
Well, yes, there's a lot of people that do not have IDs.
But they can but you have to get on an airplane, you need an ID. To drive a car, you need an ID. To do almost anything you need. the governments in most of these states will give them an ID free of charge. You can, in Maryland, where I live, you can go into the DMV and get a picture ID.
No.
And not only that, you got to have a Social Security card just to work. So what? And you have to go through more to get a Social Security card than you do a picture ID. So I don't see what the problem is about it. I just think Democrats are raising a lot of cane over something that, because even the poorest blacks in the rural South, they would do everything. Go back in history. Go back in history and talk to them black folks. They would do anything just to get the right to vote. And you talk about, and they died. Them Democrats shot blacks down at the voting poll, killed them. Because them blacks wanted to vote.
That they won't,
and now these people
ID.
Are complaining about a little card that they have to carry. Them black folks will wake up out the grave and say, Negro, please.
And why didn't the NAACP start a campaign to get them IDs?
That's right. The NAACP is out starting all other kind of campaigns to
get them to vote. Rather than fight against it, why not get them IDs?
Well, I'm just explaining to you the law, and I'm going to tell you why the laws were implemented, and this was implemented in 31 states, and eight states have the most, and Texas is one of those eight states that has the strictest photo ID law. The voter IDs that are required have to be government-issued IDs. They can't be any kind of photo ID. But keep in mind, if you go down, you can get a free, that's what they're proposing, is a free election certificate that has a photo on it. But the number one thing that people have to produce when they go to the department, we call it Department of Public Safety, you can call it DMV, but the Department of Public Safety, you will require a birth certificate, or a passport, some kind, those are the two primary documents.
They will take baptismal certificates. They'll take almost anything. You got a Social Security card.
Excuse me. The people that are misrepresented, the people that will be disenfranchised by this law are poor people. We're talking about poor people. We're talking about the disabled. We're talking about students, because students are issued university IDs. They cannot, and we have two universities here in Denver.
Why can't they take the student ID to the DMV and get their other ID?
That's not acceptable.
That's not true. I mean, it's just not true.
This is in Texas. Are you in Texas?
No, but I've looked at the laws in different states. In fact, that's what we were looking and reviewing right now, and that is looking at what is it that, in other words, why don't we put our energies on helping people comply?
See,
years ago, again, look at history. Church buses used to go pick people up to take them to the voting poll. The point is that if the NAACP really felt that this is really important, they would do that. They would get the churches. They would set up systems with the state government to have them to come to the local churches and do it. We don't need to make this a big effort like
it's almost insulting to black America for people to say that we are against getting photo IDs because it will disenfranchise it. Insulting.
No,
it is.
Can I just finish? Can I please finish?
Yes, ma'am.
Let her finish.
Very much.
Okay. The required IDs, in order to cast a vote, what you need is a Texas driver's license issued by the Department of Public Safety. In fact, all four of these items, or next three items I'm going to list, have to be state issued. Election identification certificate, a personal identification card, a concealed handgun license, a United States military ID card, a United States citizenship certificate, and a United States passport. These are the only items that you can use to vote with. You cannot use a student ID. You cannot use an employer photo ID. You can't use any of those documents in order to vote. Now, someone said that you can, why don't you just go to the Secretary of State? Some people have to order a birth certificate. Folks that are on fixed income may not be able to order a birth certificate or pay for a birth certificate. Some people will have to get maybe copies of their marriage license or their divorce papers if they had name changes. If they have name change, if their photo ID does not match their voter registration card, if they've had an address change or name change, they will need to...
But then why won't help them to comply?
Yeah,
what
about the
said,
black churches?
Ms. Taylor, that you felt like the new law targeted who? Who did you feel
I mean,
it targeted?
It's not a matter of targeting
well,
anybody.
We know with Texas and those border states, it's the immigration issue, undocumented immigration. That's really who they're trying to target in those border states
true.
Like Texas and along the border with Mexico. Yeah. It's not really targeted by African Americans. It's targeted against the Latino community. But the African Americans, those churches should open up their churches, and they got all of these people down there, big mega churches in Texas, should be able to help these people do it so it's not a burden to them. I don't understand it.
Tell them who you felt it targeted. Because she's on a campaign here trying to get people made aware of what the situation is so that people can comply in time. So she's not just talking about the fact that she disagrees with it. She's also on a campaign to do something about it. Is that not correct, Ms. Taylor?
And we appreciate that. We appreciate that.
But people need to do what she's doing then.
On December 6th, I coordinated a forum to bring the Department of Public Safety, the Attorney General's Office, the Voter Elections Commission, the League of Women Voters, bring them all together so that the community could ask some questions about this voter ID law. So far, I'm the first person here, although we have both Republican and Democratic parties here, none of them are doing anything about this. They're not even talking about this.
That's
I'm the
a shame.
First person here that's talking about this. So all the ideas that you are proposing, they're fantastic ideas, but the problem is that I'm just trying to get the information out. I'm really trying to tell folks that all of these things that are required for you to get an ID will take time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they got married and they didn't change their voter registration card, they need to go and update their registration card. They're not going to be able to vote if the name on their driver's license or state ID or whatever ID they have does not match their voter registration card. So my whole process has been about educating voters about what they need to do. The problem that I have is that the Texas law is still being under preclearance by the Justice Department because it's one of those states that one of you mentioned earlier that have to go.
It's covered under the 1965 Voting Rights Act.
Right.
And what it's also trying to combat is what ACORN did in this last election, registering a whole bunch of crazy folk. I mean, there's issues on both sides of that.
Yeah,
and we commend you for what you're doing, and it's a shame that there's not more people out there helping you to accomplish your objective.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do tonight. We're trying to help her get the word out. But y'all got to let her finish.
Can I just clarify this now? Because you all keep thinking that because Texas is on the border of Mexico and we have a problem with immigrants coming in here. That's not the issue. This law, this voter ID law has been introduced in 31 states, and all of them are having the same issue. Many of the voters are having, in the state of Texas, over 600,000 people are going to be disenfranchised by this law. In the other 31 states where people cannot vote because of the voter ID law.
And in most of those states, they do have the issue of the immigrant people who are not citizens voting and people are not registered and the ACORN kind of situation as well. So it's not just in Washington State, we have big agriculture here. And so we have that same kind of problem here in Washington State with our vineyards, with our apple orchards, with our wheat and everything else that many of these illegal aliens harvest for us. And this is an issue in many other states that have a high immigrant population. They're just trying to make sure the people who vote are citizens and that they're authorized to vote according to U.S. law.
But see, if we,
I don't see any problem with that.
But can I, let me just add this. Only here in the state of Texas, and this is not about immigrants. This is about making voters that generally vote Democratic not be able to vote, basically.
Well,
that's targeting Democrats, generally folks that vote Democratic. That's usually the elderly, the disabled, students, African-Americans, Latinos, folks who make less than $35,000 a year. Those are the folks that are targeted with this particular voter ID bill. Immigration is not even an issue.
Well, how do you determine that? What studies show that that's specifically who they're targeting?
Oh, if you go to the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law.
Mm. So the New York School of Law came down to Texas and they vetted the people in Texas and they did a thorough study of Texas and said that's what that law was designed to do.
Okay, and then the Advancement Project, the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU.
Oh, don't tell me about the American Civil Liberties Union, okay?
And New York-based. Okay,
so the question is, why don't the American Civil Liberties Union get their behinds down there to help you get those people registered so they can vote?
But see, you're making,
I don't like all these.
You're making light of what she's saying, though, as though tricks are not played. Because, you know, here in Texas, we've...
Oh, everything is a conspiracy.
But,
I mean, you know, we really need... This is
the
problem.
I'm not
everything,
talking conspiracy theory, but we
that's
went
because
through
some,
a redistricting with Tom DeLay.
A minority.
We thought that was all over. And now we're back in the situation where we're dealing with redistricting again. Now, the problem with that is every time there's a redistricting issue, we're dealing with tricks from the Republican Party. Now, that we know happened.
Tricks. Let me tell you something about a trick. In the South right now, because Republicans have taken over those legislators and
right.
blacks are all represented in the Democratic Party, none of the blacks in political office have any power now.
Mm.
Now, that wasn't something that was created by Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we are monolithic in our voting. If we had blacks in both political parties, the way our forebears understood it, like the chain that I went to refer to, the black our black Chamber of Commerce in Tulsa and in Durham understood back in the day that it was important for us to be represented on both sides. But as long as we play it the way we are, we're going to be having these conspiracy fears that they are out to get us. We are we're doing ourselves in. We need to stop blaming other people for what we're doing to ourselves.
Yeah, but that's not
Let me say one more point. If the
true.
Democrats, if this is really targeting Democrats, don't you know they're going to raise over $1 billion for Obama to be reelected? If they really felt this targeted them, they would spend the money like they've done in other places, like they did in Washington State. They spent money and sent people to Washington State to make sure that our Republican senator was not going to get elected. If they really felt that this was targeting black Democratic voters, the Democratic Party, not you, Dr. Mary, the Democratic Party would get their army of people down there to see to it that these people get their proper voter ID cards.
Are the Democrats showing up investing in what you're doing?
They don't care.
She just said
Democrats nor Republicans are helping her get the word out. They don't care.
Right.
It's not a Republican thing.
And I'm in a primarily Republican district, so you know I can barely get something in the newspapers here And if it's not slanted right.
Well, then don't go to them. Go directly to the state Democratic Party and tell them what your problem is and tell
them how much are they
$10 million to get this done. I guarantee you they won't give you a dime. I guarantee you that.
Who is that? The state Democratic,
Party.
Yeah.
The state Democratic Party of Texas.
I
guarantee they won't give you one dime.
I volunteer for the local Democratic Party. And
let's put something out there because we're about to run out of time. Okay, Ms. Taylor, another thing is if they vote early registration, there's not an issue with this. But if they go to the polls, there is going to be an issue, correct?
Well, there's no, you have to show photo ID regardless, early voting or in the
voting. When you do the ballot by mail.
If you do ballot by mail, you don't have to show ID.
Okay.
But now there's an exception there. You need to be out of state or out of the county when you vote. And if you're 65 years or older, I mean, you can get an exemption. Or if you're disabled, you can get an exemption where you can vote absentee all the time.
Okay.
I shouldn't say that because you really have to request an absentee ballot 60 days prior to the election.
Wow. Now, in my opinion, I'm just putting it out there, if people will still vote on election day, I don't see why anybody would ever do the voting absentee ballot. I really don't, because if I've seen races in Memphis where ex-Congressman Harold Ford had votes stolen on election day. So if they will steal them on election day, I can just imagine with an election.
Who's the they?
I'm sorry.
Who is the they?
That we mean that. Well, you know what? I don't know.
No, come on, give me who is the they? If they will do this,
we will do that.
I mean, you, what you have in your mind is this.
Well, no,
you know, we are wedded to this conspiracy. They are out to get us.
And I think that can happen on both sides. I'm just saying to anybody, whether you're voting Republican or Democrat, I wouldn't do early voting, or not early voting, I wouldn't do absentee voting unless I absolutely had to. I'm just saying. I mean, so that's just me, but I'm, okay. Is that somebody's phone?
I don't know. But I'm going to... I'm at a hotel. I'm going to hang up because I think I may be screwing this up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Woodson, for participating tonight. That help. Okay, some kind of way that maybe we're just having some problems on the...
Oh, I think it's my phone. I think my phone is decharging. It's my phone, and I'm going to hang up. But thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. I hope that I can do a better job the next time of explaining this voter ID law. But you all have a good evening. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Perryman, that just leaves you. Are you still with us? Okay, the phone lines have completely frozen. It's the board. I think the board is me, in fact. For whatever reason, we have absolutely frozen on the board. Let's see if we can try and fix it. And try to go to a phone line. Area code 702-487. Good evening.
Yeah, this is Pianki calling back on. I was on 314, but it went out, so I called back on my other line.
That your phone? Because somebody's phone sounded like a fax line, and it for whatever reason.
No, that was the other ladies.
Okay, everybody's phone line just dropped off the board. Okay, Pianki, we were down to our last 8 minutes. Tonight's show. Are you a Republican or a Democrat?
Well, I have voted Democrat because in the city.
Mm-hmm.
We had some very progressive Democrats, but I've become an issue person, and I'm gonna mention one thing too.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at issues like inheritance tax, death tax, whereas if you was my daughter, and I had money in the bank, $10 million, and I died, unless I go through some awful stringent processes, they would take at least half of that money before I could give it to you. And Republicans are against that, whereas Democrats are supportive of those type of taxes. So blacks cannot be poor forever.
Right.
They have to also maneuver their way into this other party and take advantage of those things that exist. How can you ever support local black businesses? How can you support local black organizations if you're giving away all your discretionary money through taxes?
I agree. I hadn't thought about it like that, but I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Patsy, the problem is, you know, it's kind of like this. I've often heard people say, you know, if you're a Republican, in a lot of cases, you may be the only somebody in your family that's the fat cat. So when you go home for Christmas or for Thanksgiving, you know, you're the only somebody that's happy because the rest of your family may not be doing so well. So in a lot of cases, it just seems like a party that's just for the wealthier or the more successful people. And in terms of black people, rarely do you see a black Republican. That just, I mean, a poor black Republican. That just rarely happens. Every now and then I'll come across.
Oh, my goodness.
There's a lot of
here?
Poor black Republicans.
There's a lot of poor black Republicans?
Yeah.
Where are they at?
Well, I don't.
Am I still on the line?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you
I'm
are.
Sorry. Where are they at? I heard you. Yeah, you're still on the line. You think there's poor black
May
Republicans?
I
where are they at?
That?
I couldn't find any. I researched for this show, and I didn't find any, y'all.
May I comment on that?
Sure,
yes,
go ahead.
I am a Republican precinct chairman.
Really?
I am fully black, and I am below middle income.
Okay.
And the community from which I come here in Fort Worth is typical South Side by the
track. Oh, you're in Fort Worth. Okay.
And again, my father had 13 kids, and what I saw was his steadfast determination to take care of his family.
Mm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
And I'm going back to what I said earlier. We cannot be victims forever.
No, I agree with you. I don't believe in playing the
victim. On one issue,
I agree.
On one issue, the voting rights law. I agree with the earlier gentleman that says maybe our energy should be put into making sure that those people that physically cannot get to where they need to get to, maybe we need to help those. All the others under their own power need to do that. Not wait for somebody to come pick me up. I'll give you a case in point. New Orleans. I saw 18, 19, 21-year-olds that were capable of leaving, that did not leave because they were set on someone coming to pick me up.
But you know what? No, don't get me wrong. I'm not a person who says, you know, if I don't get ahead, it's because of slavery, because I don't believe in that. I don't have a family member that can tell me one story about slavery, so I cannot blame all of my problems on slavery. But that aside, right now we're probably in the worst economy that I've seen in my lifetime. So I don't know if right now it's fair to say everybody that's not doing well is because they haven't gotten up and done anything. I think today, if you don't have an entrepreneurial spirit and you've never seen anybody in your family have that type of spirit and there aren't any jobs out there really, what are you supposed to do?
But that you just made my point. You had, your last question was about the Voting Rights Act. So Dr. Marion that was on the phone, her comment was, well, there's all of these people that will be disenfranchised. I agree. There are some people that are probably physically unable under their own power to get a voter ID. I'm willing to bet there are a lot that are physically able, either by themselves, with family members, or with friends. I am a black Republican precinct chair, and I'm not rich.
The situation with Dr. Taylor, and I don't know if y'all gave her a fair chance tonight, what she's trying to do in reality is be proactive. If this was the week of election and she was saying this is a problem, then that would be a little too late. But, you know, we have plenty of time.
Well, they still can vote. They can cast a provisional. They still can cast a provisional ballot. Then they allow so much time in order to get the required ID.
To validate that ballot.
To validate that ballot, yes.
Okay. But I think that's a small window, though. It's not that long, though.
Yeah, well, they've been talking about this ID stuff for a long time, ma'am. And people should, I mean, you have IDs to go to the casino.
But no, and I completely agree with you. I'm saying what she's doing is being proactive and not reactive. So she's doing a good thing getting out there now, telling people, go get your IDs.
Yeah, I agree with you. She's doing a good thing.
I'm going to put this back to you. Citizen responsibility. I guarantee you if someone said at the main auditorium they're going to give away free money, you would not hear her say 600,000 people cannot get down there to get free money.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. So people do what they want to do.
Well, I'm just saying, we are responsible. I am responsible. If I'm, you know, our book says, teach a man to fish. How many years, I'm born in the 50s. How many years should I live my life saying what I can't do?
You know, I completely
agree. Or hearing what I can't do.
I see.
But you know another thing too, we were talking earlier. Blacks has to get more involved in businesses. Do you know that 87% of all black businesses gross less than $50,000 per year?
Wow.
That is totally wow. We have to become more business oriented, like the Asians, like the black immigrant Africans, like your Nigerians, for instance. Because if you don't have, if you're not capturing the wealth that this country has to offer, not only on a national scene, but also on an international scene, we're going to continue to be left behind. Politicians go to their state house, they go to the Congress with an agenda that's given to them by their constituents to carry out. You do not vote for people, then wait for them to do something for you.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. And we are out of time. Listen, it's been a great show. I really enjoyed tonight's topic. I think I learned a lot. Hopefully you did too. We want to say thank you to our guest, Mr. Robert Woodson. He was with the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. And we also had with us Dr. Mary Taylor. She's with the Martin Luther King Center in Denton, Texas. And we also had Mr. Wayne Perryman. He's the author of Unfounded Loyalty. Also, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, another reminder, check out our bulletin board of our upcoming shows. The 23rd of December, we got a real history lesson. We're going to have Mr. Ronald Hurd in the building. That guy tells history like poetry. You do not want to miss that show. Also on the 30th, we have the biggest stories of 2011. That's going to be a great show. Also the 31st, it's a church under attack. We have an organization that's going to be with us. It's going to be telling us how they're working on getting preachers like Bishop Eddie Long, some of the other churches you might be familiar with. They're trying to get those preachers out of the pulpit. That's going to be one fireball of a show. Again, I'd like to say thank you to my guests. Thank you, my audience.
Great show. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Great
show. If you're not registered to vote, hopefully this show motivated you to do that. Because a lot of good information was passed along today. Also, y'all, listen, I got to get out of here. I think I have gone past my
Yeah,
time.
You have. And
Moving
I'm happy.
On. Listen, thank
I'm
you so
happy
much
to
for
know that
in,
I'm
y'all.
Not alone.
Next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.